their previous committee, we need to forget. This committee operates by its own rules within the parliamentary framework. And our team is setting out, not only is that your team is set extremely high expectations and are constructive against. And that gets the width of the DA, you know, is very intense. So we know that it's going to be hard for you to emulate it. But we hope to see whether we asked Al to set up a workshop with George or UIP in the US and Ross and we're excluded from committee meetings so you can get a training program there. So that you meet up to the standards and say, anyway, Al, Ross, here's a welcome to you. We have what I've said to ask is maybe we could meet to you with me if you want. You bring up to me, of course. At 1 o'clock, I'll give you an opportunity to speak. What you have to finish today. It could be for about 15 minutes, you have enough limited, of course, too. But we could just give you a bit of information potential on some of the things the committee's been doing and what we're looking to do and yes. I mean, the next Tuesday, what we want to do is actually look at the top program for this afternoon, where you can form and present your point of view. So here we are. This is actually meant to be a major key operation for this half of the year and possibly into early part of next year, financial sector regulation. The two people, as it were. And I see quite a formidable team from the National Treasury and whoever is here, all male almost, other than the before. Yeah, very genocidal, I see. And you know, as said yesterday, I think the bill will come to us late this month or early next month. And then we will see the major preoccupation for this quarter and for this half of it may this be annual report services. But it's useful to bring the graph and also obviously the medium term budget. So good. Over to next question. Yeah, sorry. Teacher, sorry.
Jay, this is a show. Thank you for that warm welcome. I look forward to serving on the committee. I would certainly welcome the opportunity to meet you. Although we might not be able to do so after this meeting because of other committees, but I certainly welcome that opportunity. And as for the full service committee, the government failed to pass the rest bill yesterday. And as a result of the division called by the DA, that is might indicate the sort of signing.
I was actually going to ask this follow-up about that for Walkart and what it seems, but you don't like. Okay, what is your woman your team? And if she was an amendment, maybe something you want to do. We are most, almost, most.
Don't care. I'm going to ask the team to introduce themselves and to apologize for the gender imbalance. They chose not to share their women from their organization. Or maybe they don't have enough women. So, just for the new members, welcome them as well. And my name is Tom Malonia, so I head essentially the Pension Financial Sector Policy Division. That's why I'm very disappointed my text for our text will be go through yesterday. But Roy, you'll introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Roy Hoffman, I'm Chief Director of Financial Markets.
Good morning, I'm Renato Blake, previous staff thanks.
Morning, I'm Jonathan Dixon from the Financial Services Board, in charge of the Insurance Division there.
Good morning, I'm Jonathan Boyce, also from Financial Services Board, Curriculum and Business Teams.
I'm Axel Schmoken from the International Monetary Fund, I'm based in South Africa.
Good morning, I'm Bert Chaletta, Deputy Executive Officer. It's our investment institution at the Financial Services Board.
Catherine Gibson, National Treasury, Chief Director of Economics.
Fernando Mocoveda, National Treasury, Chief Director for Financial Investment and Trade.
Good morning, I'm Peter Smith from the Financial Intelligence.
Thank you very much. And I know that we've got lots of people on this side. And I think you'll see the reason, Chair, because the FCAP is really a very important assessment for South Africa. And I think we did feel that the responsible regulators should be here to spend time to explain the stuff when the whole thing doesn't just sort of fade away and not too much happens. Okay, and I should say there's tons of documents, okay? And I just, I'm going to put this away, but this was what was going to give you today, each of them. And then decided to use old fashioned technology to take on TV, not to stick. For some reason, our proven system doesn't cost three tiers. I'm not sure why. I'm not even sure you have a CD thing on your laptop anymore. But anyway, so you have all the documents. What we have done is, even though you do have it, given you this part of the actual caption that you inserted. Don't confuse it with this, which looks similar. So there are IMF documents. Last year's Article 4, and it's the last Article 4 conducted. There was an update this year. But I've just taken selected pages on the FSAP, because they go together when you read that. Okay? So the full document, maybe in the CD, the Article 4 is not there, but we certainly send it to you, and it's on our website. So, Chair, why is... Yeah.
Our excellent secretary is back. She, as you know, had a foot injury and swollen skin, which was actually challenging for her. She's back. Of course, being British, she engaged with me and the two of you all the time to keep abreast of what's happening. And she was reading documents in bed and whatever. She had a leg suspended, that's right. But you are already recovered. Good. Welcome back. She's an excellent researcher from the two of you in Melbourne. Apart from a strong work ethic, she's unusually impactful about the things that she learns very fast. Don't think that the finances wouldn't be really easy. So welcome, Bridget. Go.
It's a shame about the
So, Ted, to start with, so very good part of the team are going to come in. You want to start with the first slide. Now, Excel can come in. They're asking from the IMF office to also come in so he can provide a few slides. And, but I just want to explain the content. Okay, according to the 2008 global financial crisis, so please get used to the word GFC. Global financial crisis. Heads of state of the G3 countries got together. In fact, the G3 heads of state only got established, if I remember, around September 2008, just after the collapse of Greece. After that stage, the G20 was a forum of financial ministers and central bank governors, no heads of state. But with the crisis, President Bush at the time convened the first meeting. At that time, it was President Sarkozy who attended the first meeting in heads of state. And they were convened to deal with the financial crisis. I think that this indicates to you how serious that crisis was. Okay? Just to remember, the Goldman collapse almost caused a systemic crisis in the U.S., but it also caused it in other parts of the world, many European countries, and even though our financial sector was shaped for various reasons, that ended at some point, the point was that we still suffered an economic recession because the financial sector collapse leads to recessions not just in the U.S. but in other countries, and we helped with the loss of the jobs. So talking really very serious consequences. And for that reason, the other big word that we come to that has emerged on the crisis is the word SIFI. S-I-F-I. Which means systemically important financial institutions. So, we're going to see the word SIFI and GFC not so much in this education, but it's going to be used a lot. So, G20 leaders then committed to fundamental reform of the global financial system. And Chair, let me say, The financial sector, therefore, is a highly regulated sector everywhere you are. And for those who believe that, yes, sometimes there are too much regulation, but let me say the financial sector regulations are generally international standards. In fact, we don't regulate the financial sector, there will be serious consequences. And in fact, most of the players in the financial sector will back down to regulate that. So the objective was obviously to make the financial sector safer globally, to better serve the needs of the real economy and make it more resilient, and started with correcting the fault lines that led to the global crisis. Now, these reforms were to achieve us firstly strengthening international standards, okay? And if you look at the international standards, we did have Basel II, but this got stepped up then to Basel III. Generally, in all cases, it meant more capital was required by these institutions. And the focus started with banks, because that's where the crisis started. And those like AIG, it took a bit of a while before it moved to insurance. And the tool that got used, now bear in mind, is periodic peer reviews. So all GPN in Flanders is committed to doing getting peer reviewed by the IMF. And another body, so Jonathan belongs, and Jonathan and Bert belong to the Financial Services Board. That's the FSB in South Africa. But that FSB that we're referring to is the Financial Stability Board. It's a multilateral institution which has the 20 plus most significant financial sectors, so 20 members plus Singapore, Hong Kong, and so on. They're all represented from there. So I think it was not part of this club, but we were allowed into the club in 2009. And let me point out, so one of course, most countries, when they are members of the IMF, as part of your membership, if I'm not mistaken, they all have to subject themselves to an annual sort of review, which is the Article 4 that you see. Okay. But what was then introduced was a 5-yearly EFSA. Now, the EFSA had started earlier, and in fact, I remember in 2008, we do our EFSA around that. It was in a very light-cut EFSA. The IMF was short of funds. Many countries refused to do it, and I think that included the U.S., included countries like India, because they felt poverty there, so the reality would be, under whatever reasons, but they would distribute there. But what the G20 leaders committed to was that every country would do an asset every 5 years. And I'll come to this next slide. So, it's a major review then on the financial sector of the country. And as I said, it was established first, if I'm not mistaken, in 1999. Maybe wrong mistake, but certainly took off after the global financial crisis. And it became much more comprehensive and a much stronger sort of FSAC. That is why South Africa was required to do FSAC in 2014. Because actually what happened with us was in 2008 we did the FSAP, but they didn't actually do the so-called ROS, or the standards. So it's the other way around, right? And then they had to come back in 2010 and do it. So, the ROS, okay? Which is the standards around Basel III, and I'm going to talk about those standards in a minute. So that's what they came to do. So, from 2010, the next one was only due in 2015, but because it was still the FSAP became much tougher. The IMF wanted to do the FSAP on South Africa last year. And I should add that once you do the FSAP every 5 years, the Financial Stability Board, up in the middle of that 5-year period, does a peer review, okay? And a peer review checks, have you made progress on the FSAP recommendation? So, for example, we had a peer review done because we had an FSAP in 2008 or 2010. Both peer review was done in 2013. The next one, of course, will be done around now 2017, before the next FSAP in 2019. because you get the financial sector probably more than any other sector of this globe. In fact, for some like banking, it's almost impossible not to operate totally. But it's regulated nationally. And that gets to the sovereignty, obviously. There's no such thing as a world government. And even, in fact, when you have international standards, that's normally done on human rights, that's done in the UN. But obviously, you don't have that for financial sector. So the approach that's been developed is that global standards get developed. So for banks, we've seen Basel III. And if I remember, even the U.S. is looking for Basel II, right? Initially, okay? But after the financial crisis, there was no real debate that they became, there were Basel III. And people like the May, who have a registrar of facts, and the staff, go to these Basel committees. If you show the steps, so Jonathan Dixon will go to the IAIS, not as sexy as Basel, so you might have heard of it, so he goes there. And then you have IOSCO. Now, IOSCO is more complex, because it's not just one person, or you see even one regulator affected. But Bert, I know, goes to those meetings, children, sometimes goes to you, but it's okay. So we sort of represent, and we have to make sure that when they go in, even though we've got a small voice, that when Basel III is approved, that they make sure that it's back in whatever interest or that it gets taken into account. They will not win the fight, because we are sort of policy takers there, but, you know, we can raise certain issues together with some of the big countries, for example. So countries then commit to implementing these global standards. In other words, they give up, to enable their financial institutions to operate in other countries. If you didn't do that, you're not going to be able to trade, you're not going to be, you know, you may be able to trade to Basel, of course, but I mean, you just make it difficult for yourself. The financial sector can't actually get involved in transactions. I'm talking extremes now, and I'll tell you, because, you know, if your money laundering standards are not up to date, other banks don't want to touch you. And that's the plan you have. And by the way, this is having consequences for many of our neighboring countries who are still on Basel I, and which means that many other advanced economies feel there's too much risk for them to deal with countries where they feel the regulation is of a lower standard. So the peer reviews obviously allow investors, but also, more importantly, regulators from other countries to place reliance on us. So the FCF is going to be used. The UK authorities will, from the FCF, pick up weaknesses or understand that South Africa is trying to meet those standards, they can place it, they can trust what Rene does when he deals with bar data. Or if one of the nations is dealing with old meetings. If they don't trust them, they're going to look much harder in their country. If the FSC doesn't do its work on money laundering, then you find that our institutions are more prone to, say, be fined, which is what happened with Standard Bank by the UK authorities. So, the plan has changed. Before 2008, people made the decision to engage it. But now, if these guys don't do their work, they put our institutions at risk to operate overseas. So they have to be tough. They're not tough, they're not doing their work. That's what the sector will want, and that's what we expect of them. Certainly, there's other key peer users that we're using there. So, if we look at the FIC, money laundering, there they've had also a five-year cycle of mutual evaluations done by Qatar. That's a financial excellence task force, which deals with anti-money laundering, funding of terrorism, etc. So they did a mutual evaluation of South Africa in 2009, and they're now due for one. They couldn't do it last year, but they're due for one probably this year. And of course, I should talk about FSB reviews. Now, there's many other reviews that take place. So we don't even know of. So the May will have a Basel III review, right? They will have one on derivatives. So there's a lot of smaller reviews that take place in the two. Now, I'll let Excel come in a second, just to say what the FCEP is. But just to say, so when our FCEP goes down, I mean, I don't have the right number, but we counted at least 50 experts that came. And they came for several months. I think they started around April last year, and it really concluded with Article 4 issue, which was around September or so last year. And there's actually three distinct outputs. But perhaps let EXO say what they do. He's got a few slides, so you see exactly what he's EXO.
Thank you very much, Chair. So I've been asked to give a bit of context on what the IMF's Financial Sector Assessment Program does. As Mona said, it was established in 1999, but a lot of the work has really intensified in the aftermath of the global financial crisis, when this notion of how important the financial sector is for an economy and for the international economic system became even more obvious to everybody. What this program does, what this team of experts does, is look into the resilience of the financial sector. How strong is that sector to withstand adverse shocks? It looks at the quality of the regulatory and supervisory framework and the capacity of the authorities to manage a financial crisis if it were to happen. And based on that long work, that very deep interactions with the national authorities, we then produce a report, which is called the Financial Sector Stability Assessment, which looks into all these questions. And it tries to produce then recommendations on macro-prudential regulations, on macro-prudential regulation, on supervision, and all of that is tailored to the country-specific circumstances. G20 countries have self-committed to do an SAP every 5 years, or about every 5 years. So that's why in 2014, South Africa said, let's do this. And we typically try to do that as part of ultimately of our annual consultation with each country, which looks at the overall economic outlook, the environment, and the quality of jobs. So in November, the IMF Executive Board discussed both the annual report on South Africa and the financial sector. And all these documents are published on our website. So let's start with the very short overview of what we're doing and how we're doing it. So really what we're trying to do is get to the health of the country's financial sector. And we do this either individually, that's mainly for advanced economies and some of the emerging markets, or in developing economies who do this jointly with the IMF. We have a team of international experts. As Mo said here, we have about 50 people coming through at various times. Some of these will be IMF staff, experts on the financial sector. We bring in experts from other jurisdictions that have expertise in the Financial Stability Board of another country, in the Central Bank of another country, so that it becomes almost a peer review process. And then if the World Bank is involved, obviously World Bank staff will be on there as well. We've done to date about 3/4 of IMF members have done an financial sector stability assessment. And here I've just sort of put up a few select recent assessments over the last few years. So you see, we've done the United States this year, we've done Germany, my own country, we've done most of the BRICS, emerging markets, and I haven't even put here the alternatives. So this really now is a global process. Because it's so resource intensive, we try to focus it on countries where the financial sector starts, where it is systemic for the country, and where it is systemic for the region or the global economy. So those are going to be the countries where we do the MSAP more often, and much more intense. Just to take a step back of all the different things that I'm looking at. So within the financial sector, of course we have financial sector institutions, we have banks, we have insurances, we have investment banks. Then we look at the legal framework, the banking law, etc. We look at the regulatory framework. What is the set of regulations that guide the conduct of the institutions? We look at supervision, how is the regulatory framework and the legal framework actually reports. We look at the financial market infrastructure, the payment and settlement system, trading platforms, how are all these things working, what happens in these periods of stress, how well are they able to withstand that. And of course that whole financial sector is influenced and interacts with the domestic economy. Lower growth will have impact on how people are able to repay their loans. Higher growth will mean more people want to take loans. And the external environment. Some countries can fund themselves from abroad. So depending on global financial conditions, that will impact how easy that funding is. If you wanted to draw sort of lines to get to the interactions of all these elements, you end up with spaghetti balls, so I haven't done that. But this is a very, very closely linked sector with sometimes links that are unexpected and are very important to really look in detail and try to figure out what are these unexpected implications. The objectives or the goals of our staff are really twofold. One is the goal is the stability of the financial sector, the ability to withstand adverse shocks, and to set the potential contribution to growth and development. And depending on where a country is, what the circumstances is, more weight in front of the report might be given to one or the other. To assess the stability, the EFSA team examines the challenges and the resilience of the banking sector and other financial institutions. This is done mainly for stress tests, and then we try to also analyze the linkages between financial institutions and between the three big circles that we had on the previous slide. The actors in the we also look at cross-border issues. We then try to rate quality of bank, insurance, and financial market supervision against accepted international standards. These are the Basel IV principles, for example, that I think I'm not sure. And we look at how effective it is in financial safety and how able are the authorities to respond to an event of systemic stress. What an asset does not evaluate is the health of an individual financial institution. It also cannot predict or prevent the financial crisis. What it can do is to try to identify vulnerabilities and see what the mechanisms are in place to deal with these vulnerabilities. When we look into the development aspect of the financial sector, we look at the lead framework, financial infrastructure, payment and settlement system. How easy is it to set up bank? How easy is it to get access to credit? Access banking services and develop the domestic capital markets are extremely important for inclusive growth. So having the infrastructure in place that facilitates that over the long term is very important for inclusive ability to grow and generate wealth and income for people. So let's just do very, very high level, some of the findings that we have in the SF or South Africa. First, in terms of the backdrop, South Africa's financial sector operates in a very challenging economic environment. There's no doubt that there's been fantastic progress in the end of apartheid in South Africa, but still, at 25% unemployment is sky high, inequality is very high, and we're in a period of slow growth. So that means real disposable income, households are stagnant, companies are specifically focused on South Africa, their outlook might be clear, and households themselves actually are quite heavily indebted. As a result, banks are increasingly exposed to credit risk. Households and firms are vulnerable to rising interest rates. Most of the lending in South Africa is done at what's called floating rate. So whenever the policy rate goes up, the interest rate you pay on your bond, for example, will also go up. A large area of mortgages are for high-income households to have private abilities to withstand interest rate hikes, but you know, on the margin first. Also, South Africa's banks rely heavily on wholesale funding and short-term deposits, which means that their funding itself can fluctuate quite significantly over short periods of time. And there's as a country, in itself is very reliant on external funds. So if we have a current account deficit of about 5% of GDP, that means takes 5% of GDP of money to come in every year to provide financing for the country. So the country in and of itself, and thus also the financial sector, are very susceptible to contagion and some sources of capital from abroad, be that for domestic reason or for international reason. All in all, if we want to describe the financial sector of South Africa, it's large, about 3 times the GDP, it's very sophisticated, but it's also highly concentrated and interconnected. We found that the sector has very high capital buffers, very strong supervision, and that the Reserve Bank,
Yes, please. But this is technical terms, can you simplify? We're not experts.
No.
Just also, I'm worried about, look at your two presentations. This is a very, very initial project. We need the proper workshop, a whole day workshop. So, you've got to help us more because you know better what it is you're hoping to present to us today. And maybe we sort of break it into little chunks so that you can engage. It's sort of like plugging out the stuff. And then, you know, we're going to do other things in a month from now. So can you help manage the thing? Because I can't share the thing without your cooperation. The specific nature of issues we're dealing with and the complexity and the comprehensive nature of what we do. So you're going to co-chair in class, right? Because this is really, it's a workshop in class. And we're trying to understand the issues. So what is capital part of it?
Sorry, but you have to from not understanding it.
Thank you very much, because I think with the type of information you are getting now and how vital it is with your thinking, I would really request that somehow we do get this presentation as possible, even if, you know, because, you know, we write on it, we do comment on it, and it's so vital. So that I can prove you if work or presentation going on in a region. So I'll make sure that you get things.
The truth is also, especially part of what we do, is on your head, right? We make notes, and we look at it, you're not really what we do, on our head. And it makes it easier if we have it. It's a very big deal, but this has been based for years and years. But I understand your problems. You've got a million things to give us there. I mean, maybe that's the vote of Bridget and CEO, right? And then send it to the opposition party. But let me try it with you. Most politicians, even in advance, are not going to be there tonight. So basically, Bridget, you come back at the right time, okay? Yes, we will do with our responsibility to come to us. We're going to talk to Otondo. You know, we're going to negotiate with Zahed, one of you, the Messiah of you. We want you all the time, every sitting on this financial sector regulation. So, is it possible for us to get a text while we're here? One more than to me. And if you don't, you don't go to all the documents. The documents that you are taking us through in the meeting, that we would like a few days before, but then that in the morning that we got. Okay, good, thank you. So capital buffers is the capital that bank holds, that is, that it actually owns, and which it can use in case of an adverse shock to, at the end of the day, make gains. So this is your reserve. This is your war chest that you have to deal with the problems. So, all in all, a large, strong checker, but at the same time, given the economic outlook, we see that financial checker risks are elevated, though, given the overall infrastructure, certainly not. Let me, in the interest of time, sorry, I think that's wrong. Go to the next two slides and jump right to the recommendations, and then I'll finish. Given the significant downside risks to the economy, strong regulation and supervision are really essential to ensure financial sector results. If you think of a financial sector institution in and of itself, it has usually the intensity to grow. There's the profit motive, whatever you want to call it. But if unregulated, they will take risks, and they are likely to take too much risk. And they're taking a risk with ultimately money that's not their own. That's where regulation comes in to make sure that they do take risks, but as usual, that those people that are the ultimate investors, your small savers, your
more money that they aren't protecting. So having the strong regulation in place, but also the strong supervision to make sure that the regulations are actually abided by the banks is so important, in particular when an economy goes through a period of low growth, where everything starts to creep sort of in the corners because everything gets tighter. So one thing you want to do in that circumstance is to really intensify the scrutiny on what we would call asset quality. Now, asset quality is how certain are you that your loans are going to be taken out of debt. And you can see how quickly asset quality deteriorates, how quickly the repayment of loans can deteriorate if you look at unsecured lending and the outcome benefit. So low growth, households under stress, things can turn quite quickly. In addition, and that's a bit of a longer process, but that's the process that Treasury is engaged in, actually was already engaged in before we started the SEPSAP program, is to close remaining gaps in the supervisory and regulatory framework. And sort of one twist on that is maybe make sure that there's regulation and supervision that is very, very specific to objectives that you have with that legal framework, but at the same time making sure that there's not too many regulators, not too many sort of parts around. Because, as always, if there's too many people setting rules, you can easily play those rules. You go to the one that you like best. I'll remember that when we were a child, so we go from one parent to another until we get the answer that we want. And that's the incentive that financial institutions at the end of the day have as well. So it's important to ensure that the structure of the regulation and the supervision is such that it is strong, it is matched to the objective, but at the same time, there's sufficiently few players around that they can very effectively coordinate to prevent financial sector institutions try to slip through the net and the system. That, let me close. You've got that CD with all documents. You also find all of these documents, or most of these documents, on our website, imet.org/South Africa. You find the financial sector stability assessment of health. You find our annual report of South Africa, the Article 4 report. And you find all the detailed assessment reports. So if the CD doesn't fit in your iPad, you just go to our website. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the members. I'm wondering if you should just look at this IMF. I don't want to give the background, right? Part of which you're familiar with, but this is a specific input. Would you have some value to engage with this now?
Yeah.
Very strong. I didn't know this would be like this. This is a change of our time. We brought in so many people. I just want to meet people. Now, these people are flowing in, and so what I'm trying to say is we need your help on structuring so that you don't have a situation where people have come, they haven't been a word, and then they're going to apply them to change something. So will you raise that? Can we just guide us by more?
Yeah.
You know what? Okay, but I'm talking about that more. Then we want to again. If you consider
that, it's pretty soon. Yeah. I mean, they say I'm not going to talk.
Yeah.
So I'm mindful that we're not wasting
expense. In future, when this happens, we should find another clock. Start earlier and finish later. So it's more productive. Really?
So yeah, I don't have to go through these slides. I'm just saying that. There's another question for you, Jeff. And I think, look, for me, even if you just recognize how important the SFP is to you, because the details can be overwhelming, and what I'll get to at the end is a process to respond. You will see each of them of the different regulators will respond, because there's a lot to do in banking, insurance, securities, and just for us in the regulatory architecture, money laundering, and we can't exhaust it today. But you will then know how and why you need to also hold the regulators to account. So I think Excel has dealt with what they do as stability assessment. The other report they have are the GAFs, and that's going to be the second bit of our discussion. So I'm just going to jump to the stability assessment. and just point out there are also technical notes that come in. But just to give our own perspective and some of the qualities of the small team behind it, just go ahead and the next one before this. Okay, next one, yeah. So just to give a sense, our picture is to take the major banks and insurers, okay, particularly those that are not monoline like Capital Bank, just focus there. But the biggest South African banks and insurers obviously operate in South Africa. We all call them South African banks. We call EFSA, SAM, the Big Four, and Investec South African banks. We call them mutual South African insurers here for 160 plus years. They also operate now in many other African countries. They obviously have offices often in the UK, US, Australia, India, Hong Kong, Malay, and Johnson to give you the list. Okay. I think Sharnam's in India, right? So you have all of that. The banking supervisor, that's the bank's provision department currently, SAF, has to work with supervisors in other African countries, in the UK, in the US, etc. Because that's a channel bank. I can mention names because it's not a role for all of them. So there's no specific issue here. You know, so they'll operate in a few countries, and they will have to deal with all those regulations. Because somewhere they need to consolidate the view of what's happening. Because the risk in another country can also be important to South Africa. The FSB in South Africa certainly has to work with the UK and other African ones. And as I said, these institutions are superior in South Africa, and probably in many African countries as well. Now, this is an interesting fact. Two major South African financial institutions are not South African when it comes to the headquarters and where the primary listing is, it's on the London Stock Exchange. So that is Barclays, or EFSA, or Barclays Africa as it's becoming. But their home regulator is the Bank of England. And for all mutual, it is of the Bank of England as well, right? The PRB. The Bank of England. They also get regulated in the UK by the Market Conduct Authority. South African supervisors, Rene and Jonathan, are therefore host regulators for Barclays and for mutual respectively. Okay. And Barclays, of course, is also what we call not just a SIFI, it's a G-SIFI. So there's a list of what, about 50 institutions worldwide that are, you know, your Goldman Sachs, your Bank of America, your Data Bank, Barclays, a global service. So there's much higher standards to put on that in terms of power. Auditor is not operates in the UK. It's not a SIFI, I would say, in the UK. But it's certainly a SIFI in South Africa. Okay. So Jonathan and Rene get invited to what's called supervisory colleagues, chaired by Bank of England. So we need to be just mindful of that, because this does mean that there's particular relationships and dependencies. In fact, it's a real step. If today any of our banks wants to go there, I'll say, but if you can't get a UK visa just like that, you shouldn't bow. Because there was a time in 2008, we had to fly that night to the UK. Now you have to get a visa first. So we need to put out all of those elements. I think this is the one notion I want to deal with is other regulators then want to trust our system. There's a system of equivalence. There's a passport system. So when, for example, in many things like if you take the EU, if you get a license in the one country, you then allow your license is allowed in the other country. You don't have to apply. So there's an equivalence provision that you want. In fact, yesterday or day before, I was reading a story around the visitors in the US and the EU. There are several rules to get equivalent on those transactions that activities. So, if we don't do this, and others don't trust us, and even if they trust us, but they'll trust us less if there's no equivalence or if you don't move on, etc. As you know, already recently spent $235 billion in fines. BNP Paribas got almost $9 billion fine. It's a French bank hitting on the face that the U.S. do. If one of our institutions gets $1 billion fine, it will be, I think, it will order sustained crisis. So it's very critical that our insurers do their work and have the respect of the authorities in other countries. Because we don't want to be hit by a mishap that we don't think we should cover. In fact, let you know that the CA last year put us on a blacklist for money laundering. Then I see we will be moved. They don't even tell us these things. You just put on the list, okay? Go on.
Just before you move on. I just wanted to find out before that production up.
Yeah.
No, I wanted to get clarity around this, because if that's what our bank has lost.
So
clarify that.
Well, unless our Barclay certainly has been fined, but generally these are subsidiaries, so it hasn't affected us, except for one, which was a fine of from state banks or the UK authorities, what's the bank? So that's for money laundering. Do you know that amount? About 40 million. Yeah.
Is it actually money laundering?
No, not only that. Remember, it could be libel.
Okay.
Rigging, it could be dealing with, and this is a sole point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That either US, for example, bans trading or any activities with Iran or Sudan, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, French law would have allowed it, BNP Paribas groups with it, but the US authorities then fined it. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So those are banks, okay? The overseas banks. So it's happening to them. And all I'm saying is we need to make sure our regulators are on the ball. It mustn't happen to us.
Okay.
It has happened in one instance, and then for me, necessarily, the question is, what's the weakness on our side from our regulators? Are they doing their work?
Mm-hmm.
Why did it happen to Standard Bank? Okay, those are hard questions that we must ask. But no, thank you for that. So you can just see the world has moved. These lines have become now routine. Okay, so I'm going to end this first part. So I think everything here has been checked by Axel, rather than I have. Go to the actual main document, which is the asset report, which I have a copy of. You have the first few pages, there are tables at the end. You see that this is put in a chapter summary, and you go into the Article 4 report, which will refer to it in next detail. Next slide. So we want to just stop because I think that's the big question. Then we start dealing with sectors and specific recommendations.
Sure. You know, I think you are looking at, probably it's an opportunity, we have an opportunity to engage with the IMF on their own take of their own establishment of South Africa, especially in the last 3 years up to now, or something like that. The reason why I'm asking that is because you've violated some of the areas of concern, and I'm not sure whether you were looking at South Africa's liquidity as a major restructure. And if so, maybe you should assist us to highlight those areas. You've also recommended that there has to be a heightened scrutiny and assets, asset quality and liquidity risk. So what one wants to find out from you is that how have you accessed South Africa at least in recent past? Are there developments that you should be concerned about, that you should really be looking at? And I'm saying this because I think sometimes we understate the hour of exposure in South Africa. You know, especially if we look at the fact that just yesterday after, I mean, Barclays was, I mean, the, what's the fact that was what I Barclays after, eh? No. It was our, we had almost the full control of that debt in terms of our regulatory environment and what have you. And now we no longer have that. And again, if we are looking at the developments in Nigeria and countries like that, and the introduction of BRICSA, it's a positive, and also it could also pose as a challenge as well, in terms of how we place ourselves. And the reason why this is of concern to me is because I know that maybe you've avoided to cite some of the issues around current issues. I'm not sure if you've avoided that. To highlight some of the current issues that are beginning to be a challenge. Because if you are going to be accessing a country's liquidity or assessing a country's risk or whatever, there is no way you can do that without necessarily looking at how its own risk systems are operating and how are they managed and so forth. Because we borrow a lot of money from outside. We don't have that close reserve in South Africa. So that is why I would love to hear you out explicitly on this issue, because they may assist in understanding our own point of empathy and sharpen our own focus as we perform our oversight function. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair President. I think I'm going to set off by requesting additional information or scope, which were done, for instance, on page 2, by the use of the theoretic peer-reviewed of the United Member Countries. There's an exact report, because I think that is where it may be given late or probably go on the internet and we get it. Then why would actually get an understanding of some of these issues, which were raised, the detail of the issues which were raised? Because here, I do understand some of the issues which have been raised and why they did it, but actually to get an understanding of what was taken out of that report. And I do take note of them. I think it said that this gentleman who conducted the judiciary expert who did the expert evaluation, you know, all the type of issues, we need to get the details so that we can understand the report. We can understand some of the details which they brought for during their report. I think they said they were here for quite a couple of months.
They obviously not here all the time, but they were coming in at different times.
That's
by a lady,
Which
male dominated the chef.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Oh okay, Chairperson. I still think that is important for us because they were here over a periodic time or periodically for us to get those details so that we really get an understanding, because we're not just here to just go over the matters, because they were saying we're going through this and then they'll go through that and go over and assess and make a report and probably come in again. And then lastly, this amount that we spoke about, the 225 billion, I think it's something which my colleague also asked about earlier. And how much of control or how much of regulation do we now have within our South African context to really ensure that we don't see even the slightest amount or very little amount that was taken with, I think it was the budget, which had that amount signed. So that, you know, we get an understanding of how much of control that we've got in place, so that not even the same goes towards the next amount that may be coming out when it's consolidated over particular countries or particular banks who have not followed the regulations. I think that is quite important. Thank you.
Thank you. The HIFs have been done
center here on the world. What exactly, what benefits in sort of the macro way, I know you can't give me specific recommendations on each of them, but in a general sense, how beneficial have those proven to be? Given that you've covered the whole world now. Now, you talk about shocks, and when I talk about shocks, I think of the rear end of my motor car doing this as it drives it on the bumpy road, and so, you know, I'm not quite sure what shocks are. The mortgage mis-selling in the United States was, I assume, one of those shocks. But what kind of shocks are we thinking of? And would you agree that the so-called global financial crisis was in fact a bank crisis and not a financial crisis in a broader sense of that? And that brings me on to the next one. You talk in general terms, and it's absolutely terrifying when you talk about strong regulation and supervision. Strong to me could mean something completely, in fact it probably will mean completely different from what Merrick thinks should be true. And do you have some idea of what specifically from our point of view our regulation should look like? In a general sense, are we going too far? We've still got a long way to go. Where are we? In raw sense, it's strong. As you then refer to closed gaps in the regulatory and supervisory frame. So, if I may, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, can I just ask very quickly to echo? Now, a level of concentration of the bank, is this not unusual for, I mean, compared to other countries, both in the developing and developing world, we've got recruits to test our banks that seem highly concentrated. Four banks that dominate the economy of the financial system. Is there any specific explanation for that, to the extent I'm saying that's possibly true? Secondly, what I want to ask you was something that I don't okay, I can't get to it now, but something like the last moment, but something that I thought was just a code. I just wanted to check that. You talk about post and home regulation, right? Now, presumably, both regulators are reasonably consistent in their regulations, right? And if they are, then presumably the home regulator takes prisoners over the host regulator, right? So, for example, our banks, which are home mutual, two institutions that are actually located in London more than they are here, what happens when there's an inconsistency in the regulation and the audience? For now, is anybody else in the room with you? No? Okay. Over to you, Ross.
Yeah, well, that actually do most of the answering, but and Renee could possibly come in. But I just want to make the point that, you know, the analogy we've used, banks particularly are siblings when you say are like nuclear facility. The IMF's words nowadays to regulate the banking sector is that it must be inclusive, intensive, and effective. It's gone away from whatever was understood to be like that. So given the risk that they have, like nuclear facility, you just need one explosion to kind of almost take away the benefits of 50 years of good performance. Okay. So and that's what 2008, I mean, we really came close to, really close to, I'm saying because we went it, okay? And of course, the problem is you never know that you went it, but a lot of work is done. Just want to make the second point, because I think some of the questions, I don't want to put excellent in an unfair position. They're not going to talk about specific institutions. The examples I've used, I was out there in the public domain. So they make general points, but they will talk to Renee, certainly, if it's a particular bank. And obviously, part of what regulators need to do is not go out and scream fire. I've used an airline airplane analogy. they have to solve problems. And then maybe 2 years later, say there was a fire and they put it out. To go out and announce there's a fire, really a regulator should be fired. Because just over the answering, you can scare people as well. So in a sense, when they answer, they will answer in general terms. Just obviously, this focuses on the prudential largely that we're looking at. And we're looking at macro-prudential, the micro-prudential, but the specifics, they will keep to themselves. They don't even tell us that, unless there's a real problem like the African Bank. And while the team was here, African Bank in fact happened. Just on the home host, the interesting thing for South Africa is we may be hosting two instances, but we are the home for many of our banks and the hosts are in other parts of Africa. So we need to be also careful that we don't do unto others what we don't want others to do unto us as well. So it's become really complex issues. The issue of stress testing and EXO can come in, but it's now part of the way in which people operate. So he'll tell you what the specific shocks are you test for, so that your car will make sure it goes over a bump. It doesn't suddenly roll over, okay, that it's sturdy enough to withstand certain shocks. So this is done as a matter of routine. In fact, from Geithner's book that he wrote on his term in office of the previous U.S. Treasury Secretary is called Stress Test. So Axel, I don't know if you...
No, I wanted to check an idea in mind, but from the slide that they have made, they South Africa will have to focus on a range of policy issues, you know, to enhance the financial capacity here. But what I'm not to say that they mentioned Twin Peaks, but Twin Peaks is on its own and not within necessarily the macro potential issue. You know, and one would love to hear what they actually meant by that, because I'm sure there is a reason why they have put the crisis management and safety net in their slide. Mm-hmm. I don't expect them to give us the details, but it's going to be important for us to share with us that information.
No, definitely, it's all there, so I'm not talking about that people. And let me just maybe explain that as well. Because the actual recommendations they obviously, whilst they were doing this, they were hearing from us where the two needs were going. Their problem was, they then also had to comment on the December 2013 bill. And already we had made some changes. In a sense, we had decided on two needs before this step. But they were able to talk to us, so they have a sense of what we're going to do and anticipate the good that we produce. In fact, we promised the Twin Peaks, the second version, well, and the FSAP will print it on the same day. We will still try and take account, when you have the bill before you, some of the issues, but not all, on FSAP. Now, I just want to point out to members as well. So in that part, there are, and we're going to come to the detail, they are called tasks. Okay, there are hundreds of recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they are public documents. So this is what we've done firstly, just to focus on the MAC, on the overall conclusions in their main report. But that's backed up by a very detailed and thick booklet on each of the standards which we're going to come to. So we will come to those specifically. That will just be a preview of
it. Yeah, I meant to ask that. In general, when the global crisis broke out in 2008, there was a sense that South Africa managed it better than most of the other countries, what you were looking at. And it was attributable partly to the potential into the strength of our banking institutions. I don't know, it's not easy memory in the day for us. Why do you think we are as reasonably good as we are? I don't know if you want to show the things that we're doing, just to understand. I also have a sense that, I read in the Sunday Times business section, I recall that Ireland is a very easy thing, but
that some American government representatives came to look at our national credit taxes. All these countries in Europe thought that it's very far reaching our national credit taxes and so on. So then, but I think once we get a sense, once we look at this, whether it's true that today, in the future, as far as the financial system, it should be, well, a global change. Most of our things, we don't have to make all these changes. So that's going to be the 1 year, 2 months in Vietnam. But we actually had one question, I am representing this year. Now, I know you have people mentioning that other capabilities to arrive by. But hey, this is Parliament. And to the extent you can see the thank you, it's been part of the educator. Maybe you can find it tomorrow or not, because we have a legacy. And this was a little step.
At least if I can hire tomorrow, I'm still in South Africa and still on the test piece. I just wanted to go through some of these questions for the board, so I don't want to try to be mindful of time. In terms of our overall assessment of South Africa, you find that in our annual reports, which are on our website, and we also try to kind of write slightly shorter versions, which are also on our website. Whenever you go imac.org/South Africa, you'll find a whole list of things that the IMAC has published that day to set up. We're mainly concerned about growth, low growth, and unemployment inequality, which then complicate the macro picture, which is a lot of things. But that low growth then also spills over into the financial sector, because it means that households can come under stress, corporates can come under stress. That's where the interest comes in. There's a higher reliance on external financing to fill the current account. That's mainly borrowing or into the stock exchange. And that is highly volatile. As we've all seen during what is now referred to as the paper tantrum, when markets suddenly realize that one of these days the United States will increase interest rates again, everybody grows. And in a way, nothing really to do with South Africa, but because the country needs a constant inflow of money, it matters if other players around the world suddenly decide, actually, no one lends to anybody. It doesn't matter whether it's South Africa or another country. They just don't want to. So that's why it's important to have then a strong financial sector, and by strength, I mean that they have the capital to ride out this type of volatility, to make sure that they don't have to shut down and get into a very severe banking crisis to then impact the whole economy. What are the benefits of an ASCAP? That's one of these things that you can't measure, right? What we do know is what the costs are of the benefits. We've seen it in 2008, we're seeing it in some cases of cutting out in Europe right now. Banking crises lead to a very prolonged and very severe recession. Not just low growth, but negative growth. Over not just half a year or a quarter, but over many years. So the impact on the economy is quite devastating, and the impact on individuals, particularly those that are less fortunate than the average, is very severe. So hence why it's so important, and no one uses a nuclear analogy, to have everything as strong as possible to avoid the state savings. What are some of the shocks? So what we do in NEFSA, but also what the supervisor does on a daily basis is he looks at the bank and he looks at sort of a couple of key metrics that will give you the health of the bank. How much liquidity, how much cash fills do they have? How profitable are they? And then you simulate it, you use sort of a couple of very involved Excel spreadsheets to do that. But you simulate what happens if growth is much lower than we think it's going for a long period of time. So, and these are fairly severe stresses. This is not your average bad area. This is 2-3 years of negative growth, for example. What happens to that? What happens to the what happens if global interest rates rise and our South African interest rates have to fall? What happens to households that need to repay their debt? What happens to
corporate that he's reaching back, what happens to that that he's become themselves. And you can play that out, you can see how well are they able to withstand such a shock, or would they come to a situation where actually we're out of capital, we're out of cash, we are in a crisis, we need to be dealt with. And what we find is that in terms of the capital base of the sector in South Africa, it's very strong. So banks and insurances have the capital to write out very severe crises for a very long time. This is a very, very bumpy road, and your shock absorbers, they can take it. But liquidity is slightly different issues. So cash and fill are not quite as strong as capital. That's where the pressure point becomes. In case of such a prolonged very severe shock. But with these stresses, to really go to the extreme, because that's such a concern. In terms of the supervision and how is regulated the international comparison, I think we're still, we have been of the view and we remain of the view that South Africa is one of the countries that is really at the forefront of regulatory reform and is trying to keep up the pace with what is going on internationally. Because you are so closely interlinked with key financial sectors, that's important, and because you have such a large financial sector, which is much larger than most other countries, it's important to really be at the frontier of international impact, of what we know, what we've learned from past crises. So South Africa was one of the first countries to adopt Basel III. Concentration. That's one of the findings that we highlight, how heavily concentrated the sector. Well, big banks make up about 8% of our assets, if you throw in the fifth one or your fourth line. And it's not just that. You also have an insurance sector which partly owns the banks. You have costly deposits. So insurances have deposits with banks. You have investment schemes that are owned by banks where insurance may be investing and or insurance own them and which again have deposits. So there's a very, very tight interlinkage. And that means something in the reverse corner of the financial sector, some institution can run into a problem, and it can very, very quickly spread to other institutions through depositing, through ownership, all these things. So that's one of the recommendations that we have, and the 20th reform will go in that direction. So we're making recommendations as the laws are actually being written to address the issue, is to have a much closer integrated regulation system across banks and insurances so that you can get the overall picture. If you're not just looking at insurance, not just looking at a bank, but you're actually looking at them together as one. And with that,
what else I ask you was, I don't know if this is a fair question. I don't know what I'm asking for. So maybe something other members will pick up on later. If it's relevant at all, the extent of concentration we have to the financial sector regulation reform that we are doing, if I'm correct, the government majority party, typical house here, Makoshi, I don't know, we have expressed concern about the levels of monopoly and concentration in the economy and also in financial institutions.
Right.
Now, obviously, we can hear the other parties, but ultimately, in a democracy, it's what the majority party wants. You can hear the other parties. That's correct. So what I'm trying to say is there any relationship between the level of concentration and interconnection and the form of the regulation that's necessary? I don't know, right? I'm not sure I'm being clear, right? First question. The second question I want to ask you is, by global standards, is there some norm or something or some standard you can use to say how concentrated, are you one of the most concentrated in the world? And are there other countries that, which are the countries, if you like, that are closest to South Africa for the level of concentration of the financial institutions?
No, pretty important. I think that firstly, if you look at, and by the way, that's where I think the asset is also useful, because structure of the it's all in the abstract. It's actually very useful just to see that, for banking, insurance, etc. And of course, ours is concentrated, but Axel can comment on where we stand internationally. But you do find countries like Sweden, Australia, also tend to have four or five banks that dominate. There are other models like the US where you have many more, but again, not all are cities. They even issue then our entry barriers to buy or to low. It is an area that we, I think we define with IMF, that even if you lower barriers and you have many small banks who will really survive, but we take the point there will be more competition. But that's the one side. The other side that Axel is saying that you passed is you also then have four or five firms who dominate long-term insurance. It's also very high, like 75% by 74%. And even short-term insurance, four high things of the world. And the point is, we have financial groups. So they have banking arm, an insurance arm, short-term insurance. So a small problem in here can be a bigger risk than in other countries where there isn't a legal market. So I think that's what they've said. Now, part of it is, in a sense, we are where we are. To move away from it is going to, I'm not even sure if it's possible, but it will take for ages. So to debate that it's concentrated now, yes, if we could start from scratch, maybe we would go differently. We'll make the next one harder, but maybe the next can also come in.
Why can people help here? You see, probably this is an exchange. It's just a workshop type situation, right? I don't think you want to it's fine. It's not an AMG position. It's not even satisfied. What I'm saying is, what I'm really asking, and I hear you, I think I'm getting clear about what I'm asking, which is, to the extent the monopoly, the extent of monopoly in the banks is a problem, will the financial sector regulations have advantage in over time, reducing the extent of an offer? Now, you know, clearly, I realize that in certain parts of the economy, you have to have a level of monopoly, right? And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying you have a multiplicity of banks, right? That actually will mean the depositors at the end of the day, you'll be making the four of this advantage move up. So that's not naive about it. So something between the level of monopoly we have here, and what you might say is a populist approach, given our own life, maybe, about reducing the something there. Is this financial sector relations that open up that issue, or is the level of monopoly something you accept is here for a long time to stay, and if we were to stick with it, given the level of that overhaul it, it's going to cause huge eruptions for the economy as a whole. Now, can people come in on that issue? Of course, you're going to come in on that.
Yeah,
I'm just saying the discussion there.
No, I think it's a valid point that you are raising, Jeff, because in as much as you may be speaking about the concentration or the over-concentration in Australia, South Africa is totally different because we are talking about the majority of people that are excluded from the regulations from participating in that kind of ownership or whatever. So there is that racial overtone, if you like, in South Africa, and if IMF considers that as a major risk factor to the stability of the financial sector in South Africa, or what are they looking at, you know, because we also have to appreciate that it is a real issue within us, and it has been a concern, even with the insurance sector for that matter. Generally speaking, the entire financial sector is largely dominated by a very small minority. And that can be a risk if you don't look at it closely.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to thank you, Chairperson, because when you started asking this question, you actually said you were not too sure. I think you said you're not too sure over what you're saying or over what you're asking.
When you started.
And then Chairperson, you went on to add and you said, you know, from the AFC point of view, these are the issues and the opposition and all that. I just wanted to, only like I know, Chairperson, to say that, yes, we are here as the opposition and we're aware that you guys are the ruling party, AFC, the DA. And I think that it will agree with you. Please, Chairperson, could we try and work towards a collective type of workshop? Those to be invited to a like a note again to an ASC workshop without our permission.
No, no, I didn't mean it that way, but that's the point, and I agree with that. I didn't mean it that way, but let's not travel around. You are free to say whatever you want to say. I was alerting the ASC colleagues also to be aware of what we are also. Basically, what we're saying is also that at the ASC, also a component of the committee, we have to also think about what our policy guidelines are, and we have to link them to the financial state code. So I just do it out of consideration. I'm not saying it's a position, it's something that people will reject us.
Right, who do you help?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got to go into that discussion, Mr. Chairman, so you can the question that I'd like to ask is cross linkage, banking, insurance, a small number of banks, small numbers of large insurers, and so on. Competitive risks and those risks are identified. But the question is, when one identifies a risk, one also makes a calculated decision of what action, if any, you're going to take about that. So when I cross Thames Street, I know there's a risk that I'll be run over by a bus. But I don't stop crossing the street because my assessment of the probability is very, very low because I will look at, look right, look left again. And so, if one's looking at the regulatory issues that we're talking about here, and we say, right, there's a risk, and therefore we need to regulate, what have been, other than the particular 2008 crisis, the actual catastrophes that have arisen out of these risks that you guys are identifying and asking us to regulate here? In a broad sense, again, we can be here probably for weeks and weeks if we're going to get them to this question. But my question is really quite difficult to answer. Are you really asking us to regulate high probability issues or very low probability?
I think one thing that one must also understand is the makeup of the financial system. And if you look at banking in particular, you can't lend money that you don't get. So you get money by people depositing money in the bank. Now, who are the people that are depositing their money in the bank? And as we've heard from Axel and INF, by and large, it will be wholesale funding. Wholesale funding means big corporates, pension funds, etc. So they control for the vast majority of the funding that goes into a bank. Now, they have certain portfolio control criteria that they will apply and keep in the short term. So the money they put into banks are generally in the short term range, not long term. Yes, when banks own mortgages, that's on the asset side, that's long term. And that's a mismatch that puts a risk. Is it a major risk? From a technical point of view, yes. From a likelihood point of view, no. And I say that no because the South African dam can't leave the country. It's not like in other countries where we fund our banks through dollars. We fund our banks through land and they're on in land. There is some foreign money, but as a portion of the balance sheet, that's small. So if a bank has to have a liquidity problem, it will circulate to the Reserve Bank and we will put it into that bank. So we can control that scenario. But from a technical point of view, 100% correct. But the risk is definitely in our country, but it is in other countries. That also leads to the whole issue of concentration risk. People have confidence in putting their money in a bank. So if you have very small banks, it's not us that decide where the money will go, it's the citizen or the corporate. And so they will look at where they put their money. So they will put it to the big ones because they have in turn governance issues as to where they might put their money, where they may not put their money. And that also has an effect on the quantum of banks that we have in the country and the risk that it poses because we cannot control a deposit that was going. They must have it when they need it.
So that is one of the key risks that we face in the school bank sector. So when the big corporates pull their money, it has a huge effect on their fund and their viability. So these are the couple of dynamics that sit within the system that one must understand before you start putting the bigger picture together. But I also want to add, Chair, that maybe it's not come out so clear in Axel's presentation. As far as banking is concerned, the IMF program assessed us in terms of the Basel IV principles. That comes from the Basel Committee that make the international rules and principles of banking. There are 29. Of the 29, we were compliant on 22 of the 29. Six we were largely compliant, and one we were materially non-compliant. I'm quoting this because, as the colleagues of IMF indicate, these are some of the highest compliance figures in the world. So, we must also understand that context. And we've also recently had a Basel Committee review done of the laws in South Africa, banking laws. And there are 29 countries. We were the 12th country to be assessed. And we are the first country in the world that on the capital and the LSOC, with the capital ratio, I'm not going to bore you with that. But we're the first country in the world to be compliant in all aspects of it. That includes countries like the US, Germany, or Europe, Singapore, Australia, Canada. You know, which are some of the top countries in the world that you would want to compare yourself with. I thought I would just give you that example.
Why
do you think it's so good, yeah? Why? Look, I think it's not just a necessary question of why we are so good because we've got a great supervisor. I'm not actually doing much in this story, but, you know, one of the questions as to why did we escape the financial crisis? We're not dollar funded. And because we're not dollar funded, we can't fund dollar assets. And for us to be dollar funded is still expensive. So we won't make good returns our banks to buy that assets. So we did not pay in that market from a common sense point of view. Then we've got exchange control, and then there are also what we call net open position regulations as to how much banks may hold in foreign country in the banks. So there are also such aspects. So it's not just one, but there's also that. There's common sense coming into here because you have to make money out of it. And because our balance sheets are relatively small in dollar terms, if you want to buy a dollar asset, you don't go buy $1 million. If you want a ticket to the game, you're talking about $100, $200, $300, $400, $500 million. That's the thing. And if you find yourself cheap enough in order to participate and make money out of that loan, it is not easy. So those are some aspects that one must also look into when you say, well, we expect the financial crisis. There's some, you know.
Thanks very much, Chair. I just wanted to respond from, in terms of the insurance sector, to the very important question that the honourable members raised around the impact that financial regulation can have on competition and financial inclusion in the economy. And that's something we've been looking at very carefully from the insurance regulation perspective. And I think it's an important question because in the past there was maybe a perception that financial stability and financial inclusion were almost competing objectives. Whereas I think increasingly there's a realization that they are complementary objectives, because I completely agree. Can you say that you have a stable financial system if your financial institutions are not catering to the needs of the majority of the population? Ultimately, you build a more sustainable financial sector by one that's a broad sector. It's not only catering to a small proportion of the population, but it's actually giving access to services across the whole population. So absolutely, I think we recognize that part of financial regulation is about supporting access to financial services and financial inclusion issues. So, when we talk about the insurance reforms that are coming, one big part of it is this issue of what we call micro-insurance, which is about lowering the barriers to entry to allow new forms of insurers to enter who are offering relatively simple products, but are products that are appropriate to the low-income sector as well, to people who previously didn't have access to formal insurance. And so that's something which we hope will simultaneously expand competition, but it will also help support access to insurance and financial inclusion. And so we really creating a tier system whereby if it's relatively simple product, the regulatory requirements are easier. And that's consistent with the overall approach, which is that regulation should be proportionate to the risks. So on the one hand, if you have simple risks, simple models, you can afford to have lighter regulations. But coming back to the point of our concentration, where you have large insurers, large banks, who pose serious risks to the financial system as a whole, then your level of regulation needs to be more intensive. So it's really a scale and a proportionate one. And then secondly, I just want to deal with the other question, which was, in a sense, saying, well, how do you know what is the right level of regulation? And the response to that, in a sense, is that really this is a debate that we don't decide that just here in South Africa. It's something that is debated intensively at the global level in all of these international standard setters that we participate in. So on the insurance side, there's the IAIS, which is the International Association of Insurance Supervisors, and that's insurance supervisors from over 170 countries, over half of which are emerging and developing countries. And financial regulation and insurance regulation is increasingly becoming a global industry, increasingly globally harmonized, and that's appropriate, I think, because it's playing catch-up to the industry itself, which has for a long time now been a global business, a globally integrated business. So financial regulation is really catching up with that. And the second point on what is the right level of regulation, I think it's also important that the test is not how many failures there have been, but it's also what risks do let's call it light regulation, pose to customer outcomes as well. So there's conduct of business, but also on the prudential side, if I take the insurance sector, it's not only the risk of an insurance company failing, but it's also the risk that we currently face, whereby there are different standards of practices in firms, and some firms are better at managing their risk than others, then you find that those insurers who are not good at managing their risks do tend to be less financially sound, and it can lead to a temptation for them where they are, for instance, suffering losses, that they try and claw back those losses by, for instance, being more or less ready to pay claims when they need to pay claims. You know, when the policyholder needs to pay claims, they start to the risk that they start to be take some shortcuts there. So there are links between how well risk management happens and how it can impact on customer outcomes as well. So regulation is really about making sure we have a relatively consistent level of good practice and proper risk management across the sector.
But I'm just going to stress you for a while, because we're going to deal with and come back to you on this slide. Maybe another expert just wants to comment on the concentration issue.
And you're not going to go from a sector that's very concentrated to one that has many players. It's not something that you can sign. It has advantages, because you only need to deal with four or five institutions from a supervisor perspective, and you have a good sense of where the sector stands. I think the point that we were trying to make is that from a developmental perspective, having broader access to financing is an advantage. So over time, if you can create the environment to allow more players into the system, that can be an advantage.
Just to we come into some of the other issues. So I just wanted to conclude on this part to say I think that certainly the question you raised, the issue of competition, is something we need to take on. And certainly when we deal with the thinking still, I think we may not perhaps be dealing with it to the extent that
yes, so we've had a lot of questions on how do we promote competition with the sector without bringing in the past disruption, and I'm sure you both have. And there's multiple components to that. Broadly speaking, and we can talk a bit more about this in the next 20 project, is a recognition that authorities have an important role to play in exactly mirroring what Jonathan was saying, setting regulation standards proportionate to the risk that those entities are bringing to the system to encourage greater participation on the supply side. In other words, more financial institutions, more the range of financial institutions participating in the system. That's important also because what we've seen over time is that in other newer, less traditional financial institutions also serve different parts of the market and often access regions or people who didn't previously have access to financial services. But again, this is a much bigger discussion and we'll have a chance to talk.
Just to then conclude this, but all I wanted to say is, or just more, that one of the big things in Philippines is also to look at supervision of conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get too convention, let's not forget all this. Well, reminded me, almost a year ago we had African Bank. Okay? So these things hit you, okay? Sometimes you don't even know where it's coming from. Yes, I know the staff was monitoring African Bank or what, but there are weaknesses. And share your plan. So even if you were front of the curve with credit regulation 10 years ago, I can tell you, my view, we are behind the curve. Because other countries now regulate in a much more inclusive way. And that's why I think if one looks at the UK and you see how the FCA is proceeding, or you look at the, what's the commission in the US now, the Warren Commission, the Consumer Protection, so there's quite a lot of movement on that front. So I would say on some things we are now, where we were ahead of the curve, we may be behind the curve, okay? And I think that, I also just want to deal with the issue of ownership in the financial sector. I think that, firstly, even on some of the issues of ownership in any JSE company, almost more than half of it is what? Because you don't save it, so I think. Secondly, most of the ownership is institutions, so we need to take that into account. The individual ownership, you know, by people that is actually very small, whichever way you look at it. And of course, when it comes to banks, the issue of capital, in fact, this is a big issue in the financial sector charter, is to show that actually, you don't want to own a bank unless you're in profits, because you're a shareholder of reference, you have to come and put in capital when there's a profit. So there are issues and risks that you need to look at. I just want to make a point, too, that you know, in my view, it's not that exchange controls have an effect. I think that our, in a way, there's a bit of a trade-off, you know, because they concentrated, our banks do make, you know, perhaps more profits than others. They didn't have to go and gamble. I think they also had a more conservative risk management culture. So let's give the kudos to the banks. I think that they do have that culture. There may be trade-offs. I know the IMF position deals with us. Between concentration and safety, I don't think that it's a one-for-one or anything, but there are issues like those that we do need to look at. But I think the ex-con, in a way, stuff that's there is now a macroprudential issue that we take up with banks. So it's not exchange controls themselves, but like the mayor said, there's good commercial reasons given. I think South African companies, not just banks, are used to land volatility. So they know if you have dollar exposure, you have this, and perhaps we're more sensitive to that. But, you know, we can debate on that. I just just want to then move on, because without dealing with some of the issues, and first, I'm not stressing your own relation, I'm in Jonathan, a lot of these issues, and then I have talked to, so let us deal with the side. So, yeah, if you look at the, no, let's come back. So, if you look at the peer reviews then, so aside from the FSAP, just before the FSAP, we had the FSB board review. They made two major conclusions. They actually said that there's poor interagency coordination in our regulatory structure. Now, this was done in 2013, so it's meant to be the, to check against between each and FSAP what progress we have made. They also focused on OTC derivative reforms. And although this wasn't a sort of specific issue, but they. Sorry? Yeah, so, yeah, over-counted derivatives, okay. And in fact, the whole world was moving in a towards central theory. And so they just commented on it. And in fact, the standards were being developed as we were going. So if you look at the FSAP, there are more specific general findings. Now, I'm not going to go through these, but they will say Jersey can come in later on the money market funds and on introducing deposit insurance, so how we value our money market funds. Of course, one of the big issues is the issue of group-wide supervision, so conglomerates, okay, collective investment schemes. I mean, I won't go through all of these. I'm just saying, you know, they ask questions about how operationally independent our regulators they are, but there's different types of independence, and they will check against those sorts of objectives. Some issues we want to deal with, because some people will say they're not operationally independent because they don't raise their own funds. Now, most countries still read through the budget, and we will fight them to say operational independence has got nothing to do with the budget, and there can be abuses. Because regulators, if you don't watch them, they accept the levy very high so that they have a very fancy outfit. Someone needs to monitor that. This is a parliamentary democracy. It's like that in Australia. It's like that in the US. And but I'm saying these are debates that one can have. To what extent do you have independence? Is something that we need to look at when we deal with it. So there are issues like those that certainly come. So, if you look at the general recommendations, they touched on what they call architectural reform, so they touched on good feet, they looked at micro-prudential policy, macro-prudential. In today's world, remember that banks like the South African Bank don't go through normal insolvency processes. But there's a whole issue of what they call a living world, that you need to know up front how you resolve people bank actions. So I just want to bring to your attention just some of the big issues, because they talk about defining clear and comprehensive institutional governance and accountability arrangements for prudential and market conduct regulation, including the National Credit Regulator and other government institutions. Now, we deal with that, for example, in a particular way through coordination, but IMF have set out to need to look at our coordination mechanisms more. They don't take perhaps what we said to be sufficient. So, to give an example, and then they wanted us to publish a roadmap, which I think is sort of done something. But let's move on. They make recommendations on, do you want to just talk to these very quickly?
The recommendations on the stress testing paper, which I think I think they also highlighted group-wide supervision, particularly on credit risks and the risk of interconnectedness, and we'll explain how the committee will deal with this recommendation more recently tonight. And when we've spoken about the operational maintenance issue, we'll discuss the connected investment schemes in a moment. We're going to detail the systems in the money market funds, which we're going to stand for, and how we propose so far strengthening the resolution framework.
I mean this week.
This week. In terms of ensuring that when banks fail, we have a rock solid approach to dealing with that. We've had calculations from African Bank, and I think we discussed them earlier. And then they will be forthcoming to this committee during the course of next year on how to do it. And then most importantly also is to introduce the quality assurance scheme. April will explain how we propose to go about doing that. OTC derivative reform, they've proposed to quite a lot on OTC derivative reform. We have published derivative regulations earlier this year, a few months ago, and we've published for comments, and we've published the final regulation later in the year. And that will explain how we go implementing these things. CCD, which is a central counterparty, which ensures that derivatives, which are one of the major issues in the global financial crisis, that they reduce the risks posed to the financial system. And then I think the question came up earlier about competition market structure, how do we improve competitive environments and the market structure environment, and also how do we improve the way particularly banks and other financial institutions engage with their customers. And that's part of the whole market quality framework, which is the other half of the Twin Peaks. So it's the second part of Twin Peaks that is coming out of the Market Act. And we will be proposing newer ways of dealing with entry and exit frameworks so that how banks become banks and how they enter systems to encourage competition. All of our acts go through regular review processes, so the Banks Act is coming up for review in 2017, and then we propose changes to Banks Act.
So there are general recommendations in that kind of detail that you will see. And we don't expect here to solve those. Those are issues for us to think about. And you'll see the process we put in place within government to try and make sure that we respond to these. Then here, what happens is it has pretty thick reports called the detailed assessment reports.
You look at all these bills, right, running into 2017. So these are linked in some other way to the Twin Peaks.
Yes. So that's why we say the Twin Peaks, in the financial sector, yes, we have an explosion of legislation now. So the Twin Peaks sets about the regulators and the powers and so on, deals with the financial stability objective, macro prudential policy in a major way, and deals with enforcement issues at a higher level. Then we're going to have, so if we take the Banks Act and the Banks Amendment Bill, or Act now that we have, that still, as you saw, some of the problems that we had, there's a whole new way of dealing with these things, okay? A lot of that now, what we need is some moving towards the paper we have. And once you have the paper, it will be published, we'll have comments from bondholders, and we'll have to have a new act, which doesn't just apply to banks, it could be to other financial institutions as well, particularly when they're just dealing, when it goes to deal with this. So there's a program of at least, I would say, 3 years of legislation that will be coming.
Yeah,
I think that some states maybe what they want to do is get a keen attempt of the relationship between the Twin Peaks and the other problems that are coming. I don't need to do it now, but it's something, we know maybe that. I mean, we're talking about this term of parliament, thank you.
So we'll do that check. So now what you have is with the FSEC, there are these three volumes. Okay, and that's where I'm going to make sure our colleagues from the FSB all talk as well. René has mentioned something. I'm going to ask him just to go to the slide. So it has this advantage. He has seen the slides necessarily before. But do you want to just talk through? I mean, and I think in effect, we've just given out also, just as Olano, you have a fact that we have the Basel principles. So you see the principles. Now, if you look at the document, you'll see that, and what I was recommending the DAOs, actually, members are interested, that the intro is actually written in English. Right? It's very useful to me if for any members who like to spend it. It's reading that I would recommend. Of course, at the back of the document,
want to just talk to them very quickly, you don't have to deal with it in detail.
Okay, but I think I'll be very quick on it, because a lot of it is capturing in law, not necessarily what we're not doing in practice. But you know, we might be doing these things, but we don't have the law behind us to do it effectively if we are challenged. So, in looking at the Twin Peaks law, rather than rewrite what we've got, we rather incorporate it into the new and move it into the new world and make sure that we cover it to the best possible. There may be areas where we disagree, or maybe we have to look at constitutionally. One area in the Basel IV principle, number 29, which we were found materially non-compliant, that would be an issue where the registrar of banks, which will now be the provincial authority, can stop the bank from certain activities or stop the bank from operating. We require in our country a 30-day notice period of your intent to do that. The IMF recommended, or the Basel IV principle says immediate. That's the bike. You know, are you going to the
end?
Yeah. So, things, but in general, all of what we've listed there will be incorporated as much as possible into the Twin Peaks and other legislation. So, it's not just all got to do with banking.
When you deal with different standards, they use different words when they're materially compliant or less compliant. The notion of independence also differs between these, so it's a hard space to operate.
Yeah, I think this is some of the things we're going to do. The South African high level of compliance and I think we were rated among the best of all the forums. So I think the general finding of the conversation of course of acting at that can be very well, which I think is evident in how well we coupled the financial crisis and how well we survived the discussion.
So the detailed assessment of the IMF in certain core principles, there's 26 of these principles. We also came out quite well. As you can see, most of those principles were either observed or largely observed. And especially well relative to emerging markets. In terms of the areas of how it extends to it is largely observed means you were sort of 90% of the way there, but there may be some small issues that could be improved. Partly observed is you know, as it says, partly not. And observed is 100%. So it's really the partly observed ones where you have to concentrate your efforts. As I was saying, in terms of the main areas identified for improvement, there wasn't really any surprises, because these were all areas that we had already ourselves identified as where we needed to improve our regulations to be consistent with international standards. And just to give members a sense, we're talking about an insurance act which is almost 20 years old. It's 1998, I think. So we already, in 2010, started a process of regulatory reform to change the regulations to be in line with international standards. So when this was done last year, we were sort of four or five years into a process which we hope will culminate next year in a new insurance act. Again, members support that, so I won't do my pitch now, but so I'll come back to that. But just generally the areas for improvement that are the areas already understood. So some of them are requirements on insurers, so we need to have clear requirements in the law around governance, risk management, internal controls, financial soundness, and public disclosure. Now, a lot of the things are things that we already are promoting to our supervision, but the review found we really should have that in the law as well. And then last one there to highlight, I think, is that we need to have formal insurance group-wide supervision. So currently we focus on each solo insurer, but sometimes there's more than one insurer in a group, and you face contagion risk that the problem in one insurer that can spill over to the other insurers. So global standards now require that you actually look at the group as a whole and look at risks in the group as a whole. So next slide is just to flag that we already have initiatives underway to address all of these gaps. And the most important one is the one Momo mentioned, which is the Solvency Assessment and Management, called SAM, SAM framework. And SAM really is the insurance equivalent of Basel, Basel II or Basel III. It's a new risk-based solvency framework aligned with international standards. And as I said, we've actually been busy with this project since 2010. And we're doing it very consultatively with industry as well. So it's not really just regulatory standards. It's standards that we've agreed in consultation with industry. I think there's a broad recognition we need to change the standards. And it will bring a new requirement around governance, risk management, internal controls, financial soundness, so that's the capital requirements, and public disclosure. Just to highlight, we've already implemented some of it already through interim measures, so we had a board notice on governance and risk management standards, which was became effective April this year. But the final measures, the complete framework, we hope to bring in through an insurance bill, which with Treasury support and the community support, we hope to bring after the financial sector regulation bill, and hopefully able to implement next year. Some of the other gaps highlighted with around things like the governance of the FSB will be dealt with through the financial sector regulation bill until 2 weeks. And then lastly, there was one area for improvement around resolution and policy of the credit protection, which will be dealt with through the resolution work that Roy talked about.
Thanks, Jonathan. And Chair, just to answer your question, remember you had AMG as well in 2008. So the focus was intentionally started with banks. It moved also on insurance. So those are the two sectors that have been very strong focus on. The other one now that's been focused on now that the two are done is security. So now let's get to the IOSCO. So there's three people here who are going to pay for the flights and talk. There's Orlando at the back from the Treasury, there's Bert, Vanessa, and Jordan Boyd. Now, the difficulty with the security standards, unlike the other two standards, where it's mostly between the banking supervisors, there is a bit of national credit regulator that comes in there, and insurers. Here there are even non-financial sector regulators who come in. So for example, the company registration people come in, there's a financial reporting standards council. Because remember, the JSC falls under the FSC, but when they're not listed, they fall under the Companies Act. And then, of course, you also have the prosecuting authorities, because when you talk enforcement, they also come in. So you're dealing with lots of other parties that come in even beyond our fold. But who wants to be the first? Yeah.
A bit more information on IOSCO. You mentioned the CIPC and you mentioned the JSE. Those are really subsidiary organizations within the IOSCO setup.
collection of regulators, the Board, the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States, and the Financial Conduct Authority in the United Kingdom. We've heard a fair amount of information about the IAIS insurance and also Basel for banking. Now, IOSCO is a recognized international standard set of securities and capital markets regulation. At the financial security level, care is taken to demarcate between prudential and market conduct issues. And generally, the Financial Stability Board refers to IOSCO in matters pertaining to the efficiency and integrity of markets. The Financial Services Board has been a member of IOSCO since 1992, and it is signatory to the IOSCO multilateral memorandum of understanding that has been the signatory to the decision of IOSCO 2003. The IOSCO principles provide for protection of investors, ensuring the market is fair, efficient, and transparent, and also the reduction of systemic risk. These principles play an important role in promoting a sound global financial regulatory system. And in this respect, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank refer to the principles as a benchmark for their assessment of performance of the securities sector, elements of country financial sector assessment programs. So initially, there were some 30 IOSCO principles, but as a direct result of the global financial crisis, 8 additional principles were added, and these relate to systemic risk in particular. They cover hedge funds, the regulation of credit rating agencies, and also the independence of auditors. So what was added to some background information on IOSCO has been on the topic for a while. Now, in the XM, we have findings in only 8 out of 8 principles in the securities area. So this is the topic is not really, this is not background. The background behind the recommendation is as follows. Principle 16 requires that there should be full, accurate, and timely disclosure of financial results, risk, and other information that is material to investor decisions. The FF found that there are significant gaps in both the initial and continuous disclosure requirements for unlisted public companies, also unlisted public entities, tends to offer securities to the public without appearing to make any disclosure either at the beginning or continuously. Also, reporting deadlines to public companies and statements are still by international standards. Now, I think these are all valid observations about what's happening in South Africa. We're taking the comments on board, and we will engage with the necessary other regulators or the entities involved to see how we can get optimal solutions. There are certain recommendations that have been made with respect to changes to the Companies Act. Now, we can't do that alone. At the National Service Board, we look for support to our colleagues at the Treasury, and also we have to engage with our colleagues at the Department of State and Industry, under whom the jurisdiction of the Companies Act falls. So, as I said, there have been valid observations made about shortcomings, and we take those on board, and then we will engage as required. So come to the next slide. And principle 50, require provision of initial and ongoing capital that has a potential for funds, market intermediary, that reflects the risks that the intermediary is going to take. And then principle 31, requires the market intermediary to establish an internal function that delivers compliance with standards for internal organization and operational conduct, with the aim of protecting the interests of clients and their assets, ensuring proper management of risk through which management of the intermediary primary responsibility. The SFR found that there is no compulsory review on behalf of the firm of the internal controls by an independent party. So obviously this is another valid observation which we will take on board. Have you reported meetings between ourselves, JSC, the FAIS department, of the FSB, and other related parties. And these are things that are ongoing anyway, but it's an observation they make. And move on to the next slide. I'm sort of rushing through these in the interest of time. Okay, and then principle 32
This requires that there should be a procedure for dealing with failure or market treasury in order to minimize damage and loss to investors and contagious business. This work is going to be raised in the context of one of my colleagues. We take these people coming on board, and we will work to improve the resilience of these users. Principle 36 requires that regulation be designed to detect and deter manipulation and other discriminatory practices. It is observed that it is a front running prohibition amongst financial services providers that exist, but it isn't a similar prohibition aimed at exchange members. We would accept that. And the whole recommendation of the Financial Services Board, the police and the NPA also work together toward the objective of enhancing the criminal abuse, criminal oppression in the areas of market abuse. And I'll just mention that we tend to rely on the application of the administrative remedy in market abuse rather than the criminal sanction. And we have been criticized for not, South Africa as such has been criticized for applying criminal sanction more often. But yes, we will continue to engage with our colleagues of the area.
He's been kind. Let me just say, he's been kind, okay? Obviously, we can do the admin stuff. The criminal prosecution does come to so in a sense that once, and in fact, we need to get people into jail. Okay? But obviously, the challenges we then face when it gets to our prosecuting authorities, because we do have cases which are obviously we can only refer to them, just refer them to the prosecuting authorities. Then it's up to the prosecuting authorities to take action. Now, if that happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, doesn't mean we sit back and then use the other admin sanctions that we have to still proceed with those. So stuff that's under our power, we certainly, I think the regulators are expected to do. The other stuff, obviously, with the police, FDA, and that's why I'm saying part of this discussion is we have to talk to them to make sure they build up their capacity to deal with this kind of criminal inside training and so on.
Sorry, okay, I just expand somewhat on that. The criminal sanction as against the administrative sanction. With the administrative sanction, if we have a burden of proof, with the administrative sanction, we can rely on valid abilities to make a finding that will support sanction. Whereas in the criminal context, it is proof beyond reasonable doubt. So as you can imagine there, it is a lot more difficult to prove. And yes, it may sound like a response report that we do have a lot of information for inside training. And the gentleman person is actually called a guest of state at this point in time. Yes. Yes. But, yeah, but unfortunately, it's more difficult in the criminal context, but certainly we're very robust when it comes to the administrative system. I think that's really what I would say, yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Thanks. Okay. Collected investor schemes or unit trusts, as they're commonly known, are also required to comply with the Article principles. I think that's a nice summary of our areas that were picked up during the SF. And what we can do to address it. As Jonathan said earlier on, I mean, a lot of the areas that they pick up or that they identify are not adequately addressed in either the primary law or the government legislation. So we've got practices in place that mitigate these problems, but the initiatives felt strongly that we should be included in the law. So, obviously, when we need to come for a discussion with the colleagues in National Treasury, we need to sort of make amendments to the law. Just going here, the first is the Collective Investment Scheme Control Act, and it's by way of context of an act that was passed in 2002, so it's very old, and it needs updating. For some of the issues that have been identified, the MIP identified, it's just supposed to be amended, just supposed to be amended, and amended, it's stuff I've seen in law. So the first two items deal with
When they say law, they mean they want something in original
or
in an act.
Or subordinate.
Yeah. Okay, open that.
So the first two, one fixed servant gives with authority to demand information, and the next one gives with inadequate record keeping requirements on CISs. The third point gives with on-site visits, enhancing it and including CIS structures, these are corporate structures that are responsible for oversight of collective investment schemes. The third one we've already implemented, that's been addressed. Conflict of interest, we were been busy with drafting conflict of interest provisions that we bring through in supported legislation. Disclosure requirements of CIS managers, that is addressed. We passed a regulation in August 2014. At the time of the assessment, when this regulation was in draft stage, but the assessors felt they could only comment once it's been promulgated. So that's been addressed. Accounting standard, Act, it was South African draft, so we see the amendment to other registrars that prescribed an accounting standard for CISs. And lastly, issue evaluation of CISs. As part of our licensing and approval processes, we require that CISs actually stipulate in the founding documents of every portfolio what valuation methods are followed, etc. But again, the assessors felt that this should be in law as opposed to an approval process. So we did it, putting together type of valuation standards, and we'll put that in the part of our supported legislation. That's in brief.
Thank you, sir. Then, Chair, and we're going to move towards conclusion for the Chair. On money laundering, though there's a part of process, they did have a technical note. I don't know if it's Olano and Peter, if Olano was referring to earlier, it is quickly referred to it as well.
Thank you. In the review that I may also look at, are we complying with the requirements of the National Action Task Force on measures that should be applied to deal with money laundering or combating the financial terrorism? Those standards are set in what's called the FATF recommendation. Again, it's an international standard that many countries around the world struggle or measured against. This was not approved as a statement against that standard, because the standard itself was relatively new at the time it was, or substantially revised just before this assessment was first. So the actual round of assessment against the standard had not been started at the time when IMF had done this assessment. So they did sort of a light touch review on how we measure up against the new revised standard at that time, based on the fact that our legislation, everything that we're going to system at that point, was still based on what the previous standard required. So the technical note that was provided gave us very useful recommendations on things that we need to bear in mind as we adapt in line with the new standard. And that's confirmed in a number of respects that we are moving in the right direction and thinking along the right lines in the way that we envisage also aligning our regulatory requirements in line with the new FATF standard. I'll run briefly through what the regulations are and what we're going to do. The recommendations are a mix of institutional arrangements that we have in place, in other words, arrangements and collaboration between organs of state, and which should be underpinned by legal requirements or regulatory requirements, and other things are directly should be catered for in law, in legal requirements or regulatory requirements. So the first one to conduct a national assessment of our risk as countries, the risk that we face for money laundering and terror financing purposes, the institutions within our financial sector particularly, is one of those institutional aspects that we need to deal with. Not necessarily something that we can write into law, but there must be underpinning in law for a risk-based approach to be applied and for such a risk assessment to be usefully implemented once it's done. So that is something which, together with other partner organizations and departments in our security arrangements, police service, prosecuting service, intelligence service, so we need to undertake this sort of assessment, understand where the risks and vulnerabilities are, and then structure our responses in accordance with the laws and the methods that we put on different types of issues. implement the legislation that they have at hand to charge people with money or even charge people to remove their assets through the forfeiture process and so forth. So to let the criminal justice system do its work properly based on the information that is applied from financial institutions and their compliance with the regulatory requirements that are imposed on banks and other financial institutions. So again, this is an institutional arrangement that needs to be pursued within our security services. There is also a recommendation that more guidance should be provided to the supervisors on how to, and on the financial institutions, on how to apply the risk-based approach when they comply with the legal requirements that are imposed on them. This can only be done once the legislation is in place to require a risk-based approach to be implemented. So there's a sequencing aspect to this, but as I said, the amendments there for chat that we're working on will then base on the back of these advisors that need to be provided. Beneficial ownership information, again, apart from the obligations on the institutions, there's also a recommendation that in our institutional structures, in other words, our corporate register, the system, or the register, the system of office on us, should collect information that's related to finding who the beneficial owners are. And that's, again, an institutional arrangement that needs to be put in place with, together with cooperation with the Department of Trade and Industry and the Justice Department. So what specific recommendation I don't want to speak on right behalf on applying the first supervision in the context of money laundering. I think at the time the supervision department was in the process of a state of the inspection on the bank, which was not completed. It's something that they felt the supervision of banks is needed.
Just go back on that slide. So, Chair, basically, as you know, the pick of Amazon has been public for comments, so it's the insurance store, so they're taking public comments. I should add, you know, I noticed in the money laundering space when they said they didn't investigate the football a few years ago, the money laundering football. So, you know, it goes well beyond the financial sector. So, Chair, how are we responding to all of this? It's not a massive exercise that we've gone through, and a lot of these relate to prudential and sort of enforcement type issues that we're dealing with. So some of it obviously is market conduct from that perspective, but the last time we came to the committee or about 2 months ago, we dealt with market conduct in detail. But this is all the prudential stuff that's very established, have all these peer reviews, and frankly, responding to it. We don't have to teach everything, but really we have to respond to it, and most of it, I think, there's valid points that are made. So what's the process that we as a Treasury have sort of done? So as I've said, firstly, it goes well beyond the Department of Finance for the FEM staff, FSB, FIC, etc. It also affects our other departments, DPI, prosecuting and prosecutors, etc. So we, for example, have taken this matter to the cluster, and we are setting up meetings with a whole host of departments. Now, Cabinet had agreed before FSAP that South Africa does need to respond to the FSAP and needs to consider it. So we've convened, in a sense, two processes. One is the core regulators, the people you see here. I think we haven't included them yet, but it's getting there. To ask them, how are you responding on this? Each of the booklets, the matrices, they need to have a clear response. Okay. This is something that really no one person can do. We can just oversee if someone's not doing something, just make sure they do it. Then we obviously meet with the non-core stakeholders to see how are they going to respond. And often that's where you sort of get resistance because people, you don't explain it to people why you're coming to our territory, so you need to deal with those sorts of issues and point out the linkages and get us to act obviously as so that's the thing. It needs to be one point. So, and the issues that they need to address impact on the financial sector in a big way. And,
And what we intend to do is to finalize our response before the end of this year, and then take the cabinet and obviously keep it. So to conclude, and we'll have a few minutes for Twin Peaks, so just go through it. You know, obviously Twin Peaks were done before, I don't want to go through this now, was done before EPSA. It will also, you know, we've started auditing exercise to make sure we're dealing with everything. Put our Twin Peaks propaganda aside, and whatever. Let you take questions and be quiet for the Twin Peaks, because I don't think the day is done. But see, I think the idea really was that you have this understanding, it will help you when the Twin Peaks program comes, because it shows you what needs to be done, and you may need your help in getting other committees involved as well, because certainly we do need the committee that deals with certain industry issues when the bill comes up. And often they don't have the perspective of this kind of detail, so I think it's going to be important to help us.
We've got about 24 minutes left. The aim in this meeting was to get an initial sense of the issues, not to deal with them fully. And I think what we agreed to do is that Momo, you and I should confirm about structuring the meeting and getting the right time and so on. So we are going to cover the full round, but over to the list. Of course, you can hand up.
Yeah, sure. I think it's important for us as a community to welcome the presentations and how we would have kind of responded to some of the assessment events, of course. And I think it is appreciated. And I think sometimes we feel really that the case often quite political, but we are doing. But that's beside the point. But the thing is what bothers me is how ready are we in terms of the institutional arrangement? I mean, to move towards the community arrangement, because I would imagine that there will have to be a lot of operational issues that will have to be sorted out. And one wants to know how far are we with that? And whether there is that state of readiness. The other thing that I also wanted to know is whether we have a program for, because we can come with a whole range of things and compare with all these principles, but if we don't build the capacity of our law enforcement agencies, it may just, you know, yes, we can address the character, which is something that we can address it administratively, but it's important to send a message, because there is that kind of polarization at the moment in the country, generally speaking. So it's important to get our law enforcement agencies to be trained, because this is a very complex thing. It's not easy to handle this issue, and it's going to be very difficult for them to even the prosecution, you know, or prosecutorial authority to deal with these issues if they are not really, there isn't a program to build their capacity in this kind of issue so that they know what they are looking for. They also sometimes will find that they are not doing that because they simply don't know where to start. And they don't know what they are looking for. So it's going to be very important that we build that kind of capacity. And I wanted to know, is there anything that we are doing with the law enforcement agencies in terms of building their capacity so that they are able to understand, so that they understand that there is this process between that process that is taking place, and there are these sets of principles that they have to understand, and how do they respond to them? Okay?
Look, I don't have really particularly to ask about content, right? It's more about process issues. I think it's important. From your side, Momo, I'm expecting this bill to be finalized before the end of the financial year, but what is your expectation? So you just need to get some sense. You should recall that when we shaped our program this quarter, actually, most of the sitting were around it.
So, you know, you understand this debate one by one. Look at the Woods decision. I mean, this is unusual. Look at the legislation. Of course, he's right. I mean, this is 1994. Without, like, overcutting your staff. I mean, you guys really, and I mean, you guys, actually, this week, there's so many guys that, what I mean, you actually do deserve. So, you know, personally, and I think many of us here with the team, we sort of, like, you know, it's not a problem, we need tough on the edge, of course, but we can stand a bit on that. So, what I'm trying to say is, let's say, I think you and I, Momo, and Judy and Alan, and we're up to maybe there, which you should say many things about how to structure the program for the rest of the week, given that you haven't delivered the book. I don't think we should wait for you to formally table the book. Right? I think we should move this process, because otherwise, you know, in between, we're going to have the text, and so on, and blah, blah, blah. And for us, we need to see the sense of how these tools are all related to each other. So I think, really, between now and next week, we need to find a silicon and connect whatever we are here. You know, just get some sense so we can shape our program more to take place, right? Also, I want to say to the members of Commonwealth College, you can't sit here and expect that, you know, in the settings that we have, with local government elections, and all that, that we're going to be able to sit there and exhaust the group staff. So there are a lot of reading that should be done. Now, if you say, we need to get the proposal to college, right? So on your side, too, what we need is now, we're just on the board, sure, we need to talk about whether you are doing a project that has to be here. What have you been doing in association? Why are we looking at this stuff? So, you know, you're going to be one. So, between the two of you from Parliament side, what we need is to go through all this documentation. We need more research support to find it. You're looking, by the way, I'm told by Bridget, we are getting a researcher at long last. Content is quite a day, remember? That matter has been processed, not forwarded, no response. I will follow up with this result. We need a content advisor, we need a researcher. This thing has been going on for too long. So I believe you are interviewing people for a research lab.
I will, among other things, appreciate this presentation made today. My question, you know, in the Maras language they say, let me just make sure you check or something to say. That is a Lama Kati too. I must say something. I have been looking with interest on the presentation. What I mean is that also from the IMF assessment program, the issue of the revenue leakages that are there as a result of the solution and profit safety, mainly through the transparency price. I'm not sure because I know and the Australia and the rest what has shown that we are losing a lot of money, for example, in terms of conservative for the traditional and the leadership of the OECD to deal with this problem. Now, I'm not sure if the IMF don't see this as a threat to our central sector stability as a whole. But also, I'm not sure if our think-tank approach, maybe it's for us also the scope of this approach, in terms of dealing with this problem, which has been identified as one of the key revenue deficits and important. I think it would be very, very important for us to have a sense of how this is going to be approached as part of these collaborations.
Yeah, the question we're asking is we've been looking, people which is mining ourselves and GTI committee, at the ocean and crop safety, and transfer pricing. What's your sense based on the question? And second, will this legislation in any way tighten some of the loopholes, or will it directly address the issue of threats? Do you want to respond?
So we as an institution haven't done a detailed review of what crop shifting federal does in the case of South Africa. My understanding is that the view is that it's not a major issue, but in every country it is an issue. So it's good that the G20
OSCE, but also the IMF involved is looking into that and trying to come up with ideas and solutions. But to my mind, it's certain implications that I get to state from financial sector stability. It's not that, you know, we haven't at least seen any evidence that banks are moving money out left, right, and center, and that undermines financial sector stability. So those are very important issues, but I don't think that they're necessarily very tight linked here. So you can deal with one and the other is within a parallel question.
Just about the same thing, because I think to the extent that there are tax issues, whether it's for banks or whether it's for others, certainly we're dealing with issues that tax right. But, you know, I don't think, certainly on this provision, I think for banks to hide money or whatever, it's very difficult, it's not impossible. So, you know, I don't think it's an issue.
Yeah, sorry, my tip. We actually find the opposite in the banking sphere. I'm not talking other areas, but where our banks are operating in other countries in Africa, the in-country regulators are asking, how can you charge us these fees? So it's actually the opposite way.
Why?
capacity and so on, and the culture when it comes to regulating. In fact, one of the big concerns that there is in the world is, you know, no bank can operate if it doesn't have correspondent relationships in other countries. And what's been happening, and Mark Carney, the chair of the Stability Board and governor of the Bank of England, has written an article just on how, in a quest to deal with know your customer and other provisions, many banks in the US and so on actually don't want to have anything to do with banks in other parts of Africa, because they feel that it brings risk. It's not worth the cost for them. So the fact that they might be stuck in Basel I and so on, whereas before it was seen to be an issue of development, now it's almost that they are effectively going to be punished if they don't, you know, improve their capacity. So somewhere there's a conversation that's happening within the financial stability board about how do you reach out to poor and low income developing countries. Not to say that all our banks are in such countries only, but just becomes harder. So I think it's hard to answer that. The other question you asked about the capacity of our law enforcement, I'm not sure that's one area I know very little about. I know as much as I read in the newspaper. Yes, we get frustrated that cases don't seem to go forward. I don't know what the issues are, but you know, I know the regulators have many more cases where I think people need to be dealt with, but it's something that I think we need to perhaps take up again. I think check is in regards to the process. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just a process. I spoke to you earlier at the meeting. In terms of process, I'm sure I have some priorities, which I hope will become the business of this committee, but I'll share that with you when we meet. Safe to say, my priorities do not include the 20th legislation.
It's already on our program. We took that decision in January. That's not so real though. But you're free to speak your mind. I mean, that's part of our program. In fact, our theme for this year is actually towards financial sector regulation. So that's not going to be a full review, but there's two members you can have a say. But, you know, they're not going to spend much time with you, respect you. That is our program for the year.
Yeah,
we're not going to rehash things. We want to be fair. You're two new members. But we're not going to cut ground. That won't be right. When members come in late, for example, to the ANC, they ask questions. Is it being covered for 3 minutes in the area? I don't allow it. There's no rule in Parliament that requires me to do that. You're not showing a book. Similarly, we're not going to rehash everything we started in January that your two colleagues in some other measure agreed to. So you just confer with them. But it's not fine. Briefing you from my side as a chair, I'm happy to do that. As for saying that 26 is not your priority, that's your right to say. But to imagine that the committee now will review it, I mean, it's unfair. No democracy, even in Sweden, no people allow that. But let's move on to this thing about
more cash is adding to the program.
That's fine. That's what I'm going to do, and we relax. Yeah. Okay.
We care about this.
No, I'm not. I think you should be embarrassed by what happened last night, but leave that aside. You really want to engage with here right now in the bathrooms of the city. Now, let's do that. What I also think what we have to be very clear about, and Dave is going to help me, is getting the other committees together. Especially, Joe Cross is like a very hard-working chairperson, and a very hard-working committee. And to actually get her to come and a committee is not really easy. So, which committees do you think at when? Because we don't want to bring in the other committees at a later stage, and then they feel hard. You're looking at it now as like a nominal thing. We want to be involved from the outset. There's some of this undercurrents with the bench thing, right? So it's on. When should we bring them in? Should we bring them in sooner rather than later? And who would be the relevant committee? Just going to give an answer to these issues?
My thinking was that the meeting we should take on cash, or not the telephone,
so that we've got 7 minutes more, if I'm right. Yeah, well, it's 7 minutes more. I just want some input so that we don't come back and start all this over again. You're hiding us, right? So sure, just let us know which of the DTI committee we have.
Certainly DTI.
Only DTI. Okay, so we want to finish. Good. Then, our process is to send it to people that I give up. No? Back over to you.
Okay. finish by the end of the year, but I think it's unrealistic. No, I don't have to push Parliament in terms of that. I think you do need to, and we've given it now much later, so. Look, I think if the committee can make substantial progress by the end of the year, that would be great. Then you pick it up early next year, and if it can be done before, by March, it would be fantastic. Some of my colleagues won't like to hear what I'm saying, but I think that's the reality. And I think, Chair, that something that I would recommend is a study on this. Because I think, for example, to go to a country like the UK to see what they've done and how it works, because I think what we're trying to bring out is there may be lots of unnecessary regulations. I understand it. I think from an economic perspective, there's no doubt we have many regulations that probably shouldn't be there and that are burdensome. In the financial sector, I think what we're trying to show is that either as we expected and they're not there, we will get punished. And it's not entirely dependent on Twin Peaks, but certainly Twin Peaks will be a great push forward because that's the way we've chosen to do it. There are sufficient risks, so the longer we delay, it is, these colleagues can tell you what it means for staff and so on. So that's why we want to make sure that the bill is actually tabled by the end of this month, that we get it going, there's some certainty for people that his parliament is now processing the bill. And yes, there are some sufficient risks that will arise, something we'll be looking at, that committee is looking at it. Staff and FSB have been working pretty closely. I'm not saying that necessarily enough because they don't have the certainty. And in a way, you see, for the salvage, it's easy because most of the people who do credential in the FSB effectively have moved to the SAR. For the SAR, it's okay because it's within the SAR and they can adjust plan. For the FSB, it's more difficult because, in a sense, though technically they're not very self, but in a sense they are. And there's a new regulator that operates. So how do you prepare for that? And what are the transition risks? That's why even when the boat starts or takes effect, Twin Peaks is not going to start immediately. There may be a period of parallel existence for a short while until we deal with this. But I guess this is an issue for later. I guess what we need to do is what the SF said, that we need a credible roadmap that we need to publish, and I think that's what's been asked, and then actually try and help do it with doing where we are, where we want to go. So, Chair, on the book, we definitely will have it by then. But let me put it this way. We already got the bill, the general version of the bill that was Cabinet has approved. Now it's just a smaller exercise where lawyers come in with subject to it being cleared, and we have to take into account a second round of comment. It doesn't change things substantially in any major policy way, but what it does do is it does mean that the way you say things, etc. Now, the bill is almost complete. The state law advisors have been looking at it, but we need to give them the final version, which we're doing, hopefully this week, inshallah. Then what we'll do is we'll make sure, I think that the turnaround will be quicker and their processes for them, getting the proofs and so on. So we're pretty confident that by the end of this month, the bill will be tabled. And you can start. But your point too, that even if it's not there, there's nothing in the bill that we can give you. And we'll leave the presentation with you. But I don't know if Royal Kenny just want to add anything on the bill. Okay. So I think, that's the way we see it.
Look, we've done this before, right? You said the bill is not going to substantially change. You said the constitutional is going to be that clause, right? And so what I'm saying is that we don't have to wait for the formal taking. The conceptual issue, look at your overview here, right? This sort of thing we can take forward before the bill is tabled formally. I'd like to suggest that go carefully, because you don't want to be unconstitutional. So to me, I don't know, we might have to get it. But to me, it's not a big deal whether you do it on the 30th of August or on the 7th of September. But what is important is because we allocated the time, then we begin to close the things in formats, right? But obviously we will not look at the bill until after the public hearing, because we're hearing your point of view, Parliament itself hasn't appointed you yet, and how can we shape our point of view, so to speak, from what we hear from civil society actors and things and academics and so on. So, until we have the public here, now you say to me this thing about visiting the UK or whatever, this is not something one is exposed to, it's something we can discuss, but we don't want to just go in there without being absolutely clear what are the specific set of issues we want to look at. So if you are talking about such a visit, especially in just the second half of the year, right? But secondly also, there are limited times which Parliament allows these visits, right? I think now it's not that serious, it's very onerous to actually get permission and so on. But we can look into that, right? But we're not going to plunge into it. In other words, let's get a feel for what the schools are. Also, if we go and visit the UK, it's you telling us where we should go. As part of the right, that's for our interest. We want to go to Ireland or let's go to Spain or whatever. So we might also have a say on that thing. Moreover, you know, I don't like personally, this is my personal view, wants to mull over these things and discuss it collectively, bring only to it in that sense. What about developing countries? In other words, it's often better nowadays to visit a developing country of some measures equality. What if some measures are like dribble or I don't know what they think. So in short, I think this thing should be put on the agenda for something later down the road, where it's very properly and rigorously constructed, you know exactly what you're seeking to do, what the issues are, things that the committee don't know. But you as a legislator, you've been working for a very long time. So what I'm saying short is, I'm thinking to what's saying. That why can't we, given that we have services that makes me choose to exercise that, keep forward the discussion we've had here. So for example, your second set of strikes, but I don't know about the real. So can we look into that? In short, I'm suggesting, colleagues, that we continue to look at the conceptual issues, no ruling parliament preempted, but we can't proceed formally with the vote until it's tabled and the parliament is given enough time to look at and come back to us with proper guidance. So that's broadly the suggestion, okay? The fine-tuning we can do. And in fact, it's now 3 minutes past us for the election, so we can draw to a conclusion unless you roll about. Good. Thank you all. Bye.